slide, and this is the one when you look at it, I think it's extremely sobering. If you just compare over the last 15 years or so, the blue bars at the top are is domestic consumption of graded lumber. Okay, domestic consumption of graded lumber and overall production, of course. So when we're looking at where production is down, it's the domestic consumption is the big part of it. Some of that, yes, was the housing recession, but again, a lot of it as well, as we know, markets are moving offshore. Manufacturing is taking places offshore, but I think too often we focus way too much on the manufacturing taking place offshore. Because the flip side of that is much of the consumption of wood products, especially American hardwoods, is also taking place offshore. And I think that's the piece of the puzzle that we tend to miss quite a bit. You want to know who's going to be buying things made out of wood in the future, you need to know where the consumers are in the future. This is a pretty interesting graph here. This shows, this is from the UN, but it shows the number of families. So this is numbers of families that are entering what the UN calls middle-class consumption, which is $20,000 a year. It doesn't sound a lot to us, but for someone living in rural China, $20,000 means you can start buying your own home. It means you can start buying consumer products. It means you're going to have furniture. Okay. If we look at the growth just in the next 5 years now of the number of families that are joining this middle class around the world, the numbers are staggering. We've never seen anything like it in human history. It took us, I mean, look at just population growth. It took us all of human history until about early 1700s to get our first 1 billionth person on the planet. We're now adding 1 billion people every 9.5 years. That's the pace we're on right now. Resources are going to be under pressure, and we're sitting on a renewable low energy resource, and I'll talk more about environmental stuff a little bit later. But looking at where your consumption is going to be, where the people that are buying things made out of hardwoods, a lot of it is overseas. Yes, the U.S., we still are the biggest market, but that's changing very, very quickly. And obviously, as you see, it's no secret that, of course, China is the biggest one. You look at 234 million families that are going to be entering the middle class over the next 5 years. When you consider we have, 350 million people in the United States, you're talking about an awful lot of new consumers coming online. The U.S., obviously, we have been exporting for quite a long time. We now are, in fact, the world's largest exporter of hardwood lumber, and by quite a bit as well. But I think just as interesting, if you look back over the last 5 years, we are the only of the major exporters around the world that have seen increases in each of the last 5 years. Considerable increases in our exports in each of the last 5 years. And actually, the export piece, if you take Canada out of the equation, is even more, impressive would be the word I would use, but it's even more startling, because a lot of the increase of what's going right now into China is really making up for something that we're no longer selling into Canada. So if you take Canada out of the equation, the increase in overseas consumption really has been mind-boggling the last few years. So we are, in fact, the largest exporter in the world, and we're increasing our share. We're now at 22% of all traded hardwood lumber around the world originates here in the United States. We are the biggest game in town. We flip it over, we look at where the exports are going for us. China, of course, no surprise after the slide that we just saw. Canada's still up there, but Vietnam, Mexico, Italy, and a lot of other small, I want to say niche markets, but there are an awful lot of markets around the world that also have increasing populations, increasingly wealthy populations that are starting to demand better home environments, better building environments, better furniture, and so forth. I think that this is another slide that I want to thank Chuck Johnson for, but I think this really explains that foreign consumption point that I was trying to make before. Because we all know in the early days when we first started shipping to China and we saw huge increases in our exports of hardwood lumber to China, if you look in those early years, almost all of that was going to towns along the coast where it was being manufactured into furniture, manufactured into flooring, manufactured into something else, shipped right back out either to the United States, to Japan, to Europe, or some of the other markets around the world. When the US and Europe went into their recession, 2007, at first we saw a big dip in exports going into China, because the Chinese companies that were feeding all of these started saying, oh, wait a minute, you know, we're losing all of our customers. And then it dawned on a few of them that, wait a minute, we're sitting on the biggest consumer market right now in the world. why are we trying to ship everything out when we've got customers right here? And that's something that we've seen over the last, you know, particularly the last 5 and 6 years now, where we've seen even sharper increases, and almost all of that lumber that's going in there right now. Our estimates, there's no solid numbers, but our estimates, if you look back around 2002, 2003, probably 80% of what we sent into China came right back out. We believe right now closer to 90% of the hardwood lumber that goes into China stays in China. Now, the same is not true with Vietnam. The same is not true with some other places that are picking up the slack where China used to be the one that was selling the furniture all over the world. Chinese wages are going up. They're no longer the cheapest one in town. Vietnam's cheaper. Indonesia's cheaper. You start moving places, Myanmar, Burma. There's always going to be somewhere cheaper. Even Mexico now, if you start taking a look at it, Mexican wages are actually lower than coastal China wages. So when you start adding in things like shipping back and forth, manufacturing in Mexico is on its way back. And that's a market, if you're not active right now, you may want to take a look at, because a lot of those factories that were closed down around 2000 or so, people are walking back in and turning those lights on. You start adding now the cheaper labor in Mexico, they're finally getting their house, they're finally getting their fiscal house in order. Security is still a bit of an issue in some areas, but Mexico is very much in the game. And that's a big part of, because of what's happening in China, because of what's happening elsewhere, we're seeing new opportunities all the time. But when we talk about new markets, and we need to find new markets for our graded lumber, new markets, we don't just mean new geographical regions. New markets for our lumber also means new uses for it, new innovative uses, ways that we've never used things before. Two of them in particular that we've been working on quite closely in Europe are on exterior uses and also on structural uses, both of which have predominantly been either tropical or in the structural softwood markets exclusively. Well, things are changing. There's new technologies now, new things that are enabling our lumber to go in and play a bigger and bigger part of these roles. External joinery is one. We have some things going on now like thermal treated lumber that suddenly make our lumber able to be used outside, our lumber able to be used in cladding. The Europeans love their cladding on the outside of buildings. It's starting to be used now for that. This is a brand new market. We're trying to help this along through a lot of our promotional efforts, one of which we worked with a very famous furniture designer in the UK to come up with this bench that was made out of 8 different species of American hardwood, all thermally treated. This bench is sitting outside of the Victoria and Albert Museum, in London. And we're monitoring over time how this is wearing and so forth. We have a group of scientists from the Institute of Wood Science in the UK that are monitoring this bench and seeing what's happening over time. We've got a couple of other projects where we're looking as well. This is money that is being used for our promotional money from the US Department of Agriculture. You're asking now, is there really a commercial application for all this? It's relatively new. Well, there is, and we're starting to see it. This is the new Museum of European and American Civilizations in Marseille, France. And this was done by Renzo Piano, who was one of the most influential and most famous architects in the world. Everything that you see here from, and this is a roof terrace of the museum, everything you see on there from the decking to all of that lattice work is all American ash, and it's all thermally treated. This is one of a number now of these new things, so there are commercial applications for a lot of us that is coming online, that are being used. Windows is another very interesting one, and I think a very interesting opportunity for thermally treated wood again. We're looking in particularly in the UK. In 1975, wood had 96% of the exterior window market in the UK, 96%. In 2010, wood had 8% of the window market in the UK. Now, with things, there's a couple of companies now that are starting to look at, wait a minute, this is much more stable, this thermally treated wood. We can get the benefits of using wood without some of the issues that we faced in the past. Again, direct commercial applications, new uses, and this is tulip wood, this is yellow poplar. So new uses for wood, for our wood, that we really haven't seen before. This is also part of finding new markets. It's not just finding new countries to sell the wood in. Structural design is another one. You talk about use of promotional funds. When we started approaching architects about 10, 11 years ago in Europe about using American hardwoods in some structural applications, We found out very quickly that it would have been against the law. U.S. hardwoods had not been tested and were not entered into the EU building codes. So again, using the promotional dollars, we were able to do that. We had 11 of our species tested, entered into the building codes throughout the European Union, and suddenly we saw a huge uptake on American hardwoods being used in load-bearing structural applications. And the architects love it, because they can showcase the wood and the warmth of the wood and still have it in a structural, and still have it in a load-bearing structural thing. You see these beams here, the glass in the middle. That's the Houses of Parliament in London, the office building that sits right in front of Big Ben, where all the members of Parliament hold their office. The original plans for that called for those beams to be steel, but the architect wanted the warmth of wood. And that's all American white oak beams they're using now in that. That wouldn't have been possible if we didn't use USDA dollars to do the research and to do the testing of the American hardwoods in the first place. And we're seeing a lot more of this type of thing going on right now across Europe. We're also trying to showcase to get architects and designers involved and see what the potential are, what some of the things you can do with wood structurally as well as aesthetically. And a couple years ago, we did this called the Timber Wave, again outside the Victoria and Albert Museum as part of the Design Week in London. That's American red oak. It's laminated American red oak. It shows how it can be bent, how it can be used, how it can load. The amount of the engineers explained it to them. They don't quite understand it, but apparently the amount of pressure to keep that shape on there is pretty incredible. And what we've seen now doing strength testing on American hardwoods is that it's actually quite a bit stronger and much stronger or strength-to-weight ratio than any of the softwoods that are currently available. Again, this gets architects very, very excited because they can have the same strength and make smaller, more delicate-looking pieces, floating staircases, things along that nature. Again, this is something that would not have been possible without the strength testing and stuff that we are, again, doing right now with funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We took that even a step further this year by looking at the potential for CLT. CLT has been a staple in the softwoods for a few years now. But there's no reason to believe it can't be done with hardwoods. In fact, we're very excited about some of the initial results we're seeing from the testing. We worked with a group out of some architects out of the Netherlands, some manufacturers in Italy and Switzerland, and we put together something. How can we showcase the strength potential as well as the aesthetic beauty of wood, CLT, and hardwoods as a viable commercial option? This architect, being Dutch, was a big fan of M.C. Escher. For those of you who know who M.C. Escher was, one of his most famous is called The Endless Stairs. What he decided to do was put that in a life-size format, a real format, and have it built and stationed. And have it built and stationed right outside the Tate Modern Museum. And again, this is all done with CLT tulip wood. Now, since this has been out there, we're starting to see now West Virginia is starting to build all its schools out of CLT instead of using now, not with hardwoods yet, but there's a potential, but instead of using poured concrete and using steel structures, we're seeing West Virginia now, they're making schools out of CLT. We're starting to see some real options, and I'll show you a couple of examples now where CLT is being used to build 9, 10, 11, even 12-story buildings, commercial buildings, so not just two-story homes anymore. Again, this is a market that didn't really exist. I'm not sure if this is going to work, but I'm going to try to play just a couple of seconds of this just so that you can see it in sight. If this is going to go. There's no sound. That's all right. But again, working with the architects, and we had this put in, but what's been very interesting about this project is the amount of interest that there is, that there's been not only from architects, not only from designers, but also from the engineers. Building engineers are fascinated by this. And one of the reasons they're fascinated by this is, I was mentioning before, the strength to weight ratios. When you look at both bending and density, look at where, here's four of our most common species, where they sit compared to where softwood sits. Again, there's real potential in structural markets, brand new applications that we have never seen before. And this also has some very, very interesting environmental implications as well that we're going to start to, that we'll be able to talk about a little bit later. Here's a story, here's a nine-story building in London. There's now a 12-story building in Australia that's made completely out of wood frame. and what's using CLT. And what's really interesting about this is not just the use of materials, the wood, which as we all know stores carbon as opposed to concrete and poured steel, but how quickly these buildings can be put up, the amount of disruption there is to the neighborhoods while they're being built, as well as the much lower numbers of people that are involved in putting these up. I mean, it's a win-win situation for everyone involved. We have a real opportunity. This CLT is really, really catching on. And as people are looking at, steel and concrete and some of the other building materials and saying, wait a minute, we've got a much better option here that's easier to put up, it's quicker to put up, and to boot, it's got a much better environmental story to tell. So again, we're seeing a lot of these, and part of our approach in doing these kinds of programs is to get out, not just to the press, not just to the design press, not just to the architectural press, to the engineering press, and to the general public at large. By having this thing sitting outside the Tate Modern Museum right on the Thames in London for about 6 weeks, we had literally tens of thousands of people come by, pick up the literature, talks about our story, talks about our sustainability story, talks about the U.S. forest, and talks about this new technology. This is really starting to create, again, a lot more interest from a lot of people. And this leads me into our third, I think, which is very, very important, is we need to do a much better job capitalizing on the green credentials that we have as an industry. Everyone is talking now. There's so much discussion about environmental this, eco that. And we're being lost, we're being drowned out because we really don't have a voice to tell our story. And we have a hell of a story to tell if somebody can find a way to do it. We all know in this room, I'm not telling you something you don't know, we all know that our forests are underutilized. And it's not just us, even the United Nations, when they start talking about the situation of the world's forests, they came up with their primary concern dealing with the United States is that we are underutilizing our hardwood resource. And this is encouraging the conversion of woodlands into something else because we're simply not taking advantage of what we have. This is the story that should be out there, but it's not. This just came out 2 weeks ago, and this was on the AP wire. The BBC picked it up. CNN picked it up. This is a brand new thing coming out called from Global Forest Watch. And the idea is they're using satellite technology to tell the real story, a real-time story of deforestation and illegal logging. That's what this is being presented at. Actually, it's something that we've been following for quite a while, and it's a thing that has, I think, a real opportunity to be of tremendous benefit to us. Because there are places in the world where it's not happening in a way that's sustainable. There are places in the world where deforestation is taking place. This could help shine a light on that. Unfortunately, you can't always depend on journalists to get the story right. This is the picture that went along with this press release into BBC, into the AP wire, into CNN. The caption under the picture says, a new global monitoring system has been launched that promises near real-time information on deforestation around the world. Forest campaigners say this is the equivalent of 50 football fields of trees being cut down every minute of every day over the past 12 years. The problem is, what this map shows is simply log removals. It doesn't show regeneration, it doesn't show any kind of replanting, it's simply log removals. Yet this was the big picture on the top of that, talking about deforestation and how Global Forest Watch is gonna help us battle this. And look at the picture we have. There's not a tree left standing south of the Mason-Dixon line. But this is the information that's out there. This is the kind of stuff that we need to do a much better job fighting. And I know you guys have seen this, that some of our competing materials. Here's this Kalinga stone, which is PVC, petroleum-based plastic, talking about say no to wood, use our PVC, and do your bit to conserve nature because the use of wood leads to deforestation and massive destruction of nature. This one I love. This is a Japanese company, again, PVC, oil-based, high-energy, high-polluting industry coming up with decking that's better than wood decking because we protect primeval forests. Our objective was to develop the technology to create a composite wood which is superior to natural wood in order to combat the thoughtless lumbering of forest trees. This is an advertisement in Architectural Journal. I love this one. We may run out of wood, but not aluminum. Plenty of that to go around. No destruction involved at all in aluminum. And my favorite all time still, steel, the ultimate sustainable material. I mean, come on, people. How are we losing this debate? We've done the science. We did, again, using FAS, using USDA funds. We did a life cycle analysis, as I think everybody here is aware of, a couple of years ago, showing American hardwood lumber from the forest all the way to delivery overseas at any market around the world. What we've found, the red shows under here, is the carbon stored in the wood. In every single species, including shipment, and this is shipping to, all the way to Japan, the amount of carbon emitted in all of the steps, forestry, the trucks going in, the machinery, the sawmills, the dry kilns, the trucking, the packaging, the shipping, and the trucking or training on the other end of that. Even with all those emissions, the amount of carbon stored in the wood is greater than all the emissions to get that to those overseas markets. There's not another material in the world that comes even close. That comes even close to this. This is our selling point. This is going to be used in what are called environmental product declarations. And again, I know I've been talking about these for a couple of years now. By 2016, so 2 years, all building materials, including interior fittings in Europe, are going to need environmental product declarations. We're prepared now to give manufacturers in Europe, whether they're making flooring or they're making furniture or they're making moldings, they're making stair parts, we can give them now ISO-compliant life cycle information that they can feed into their systems moving forward so that they can produce the EPDs for their customers. Other things that came out of this that should be part of the everyday discussion as much as the 50 football fields a second. When we start looking at building materials, for every 1 meter of concrete that we don't use and replace it with a cubic meter of wood, a full ton of CO2 is removed from the atmosphere. This is the kind of number that should be in the kids' heads, not the 50 football fields a second. This kind of number. When you start talking how many cubic meters are out there, this is powerful stuff. But we're silent. We're silent. Nobody knows this. We're trying to get the message out more and more. One of the things we did in the UK was we started working with the Royal College of Art, with graduate students, design students, and furniture. We wanted to do not just a furniture design competition, but a furniture design competition when they did full environmental product declarations. So they measure the environmental impacts across the board in each piece that they made. And obviously the goal is not to have the lowest environmental impact because you just make the smallest piece of furniture. But it's getting them to understand that the decisions they make on materials, the decisions they make on whether to use this or that, have consequences. And we have those tools now so that designers can make these decisions and make these decisions intelligently. And you know what? It's great for us. It's great for our material because nobody else can tell the same story that we can when it comes to carbon sequestration and everything else. The group that we worked with on this actually was a very famous high-end furniture manufacturer in the UK called Benchmark. For those of you that were at the AHEC convention in Budapest, you heard the owner of Benchmark come in and speak. He's actually launching this spring, and I can send you a link, but a full line of American hardwood furniture where he has full environmental impact analysis for each piece of furniture. That's his marketing key. That's his thing, and he's selling this now high-end throughout the UK, and he's saying, this is what we're using. Look at how low the impacts of this on the environment. Try making the same chair out of metal or out of plastic or out of any other material. See what your impacts are. This is now finding its way into the marketplace. We need to encourage further developments of that. We did the same thing going back to this. We did a full environmental impact assessment on the stairs. We took from the AHEC study that we did on the lumber from the forestry delivered into Italy. To that we added the manufacturing of the CLT panels in Italy and the manufacturing of the CLT panels into the stair parts themselves in Switzerland. Then moving all of that back into the UK and putting it up on site. Each one of those steps was measured. And at the end of the day, we come out with environmental impacts. This is, again, comes out of environmental product declarations. These are the six things you have to measure. Everyone looks at, of course, global warming potential. That's your carbon footprint. That's the one everyone focuses on. But it also measures things like acidification, eutrophication, which is, you know, things that go into the air, things that go into the water, use of renewable energy, use of non-renewable energy. All of these need to be measured as part of an environmental product declaration. And what came out of this project, I think, is something that's been really gotten us a lot of publicity, a lot of doubters, a lot of people calling for more information. But there's three really three end results that came out of measuring this particular staircase that I think are worth mentioning, and again, are the kind of things that should be in people's mind when they talk about wood. The first is every single aspect of that from the manufacturing of the lumber, the shipping it, the manufacturing of the panels, shipping it around, moving it to the UK, putting it up, having it there, all of the carbon emissions involved in every single step of that process is still less than the carbon that's stored in the wood itself. So that, as sitting there, is actually carbon negative. We hear carbon neutral. It's not even carbon neutral. It's carbon negative. So there's more energy, there's more carbon stored in that wood than in all of the emissions involved in not only in the wood, but manufacturing, shipping, and everything else that was involved. The other part that I thought was really interesting, the single most, what they call the hotspot, the single biggest environmental impact of this whole project were the concrete footers that we had to put down in the grass in order to hold the structure. Those concrete footers had a much higher carbon footprint than the entire structure itself, including all of the shipping. That's the kind of thing that people don't really understand and people need to understand. And the third one, again, when we talk to people, because you know, I was there for a few days and you know, we talked to a lot of people that came by and it's like, yeah, but how many trees did you have to cut down to make that? And one of the real interesting things that came out of that is it's not a question of how many trees did you have to cut down to make that. You look at where's the regeneration? And they were able to calculate out the regeneration that it actually took the American hardwood forest, and this is tulip wood specific, you know, yellow poplar specific, it took us exactly 96 seconds for the forest to regenerate every stick of wood that was used in that. 96 seconds. Again, when people hear that, it clicks. But they don't hear that. They hear the 50 football fields a second is what they keep hearing. Again, this is going in. This is going to be much more important. We talk about the CLTs and things moving forward. Green building. I know we brag on it here in the States because we happen to have the worst system in the world when it comes to green building here in the U.S., but there are actually a lot of places around the world that do believe science should be a part of green building. Be nice if we get there someday, but it is happening in other places where you're measuring things and you start taking into account like that 8 or 9 story building made out of CLT. The impacts of that compared to a regular steel and concrete building is huge. It's huge. So you do have municipalities. We mentioned now the schools in West Virginia. We do have municipalities looking at this information. It is out there. Leeds starting to move in that direction. They're doing things like now a credit for responsibly extracted materials. But again, all it does is just shine an even bigger spotlight on how Leeds really does not treat wood very well. To get the responsible extraction credit for steel, for any other material that's mined or comes off of the land or comes out of the sea, in order to get that credit, all you need to do is sign on to a World Wildlife Fund pledge that I will not rape and pillage the environment. Honest. You sign that pledge, you get the point. For wood, you only get that point if it's FSC certified. So if a certification body gets money in their pockets, apparently that's what determines sustainability. That needs to change, but we need to have a bigger voice. We need architects to be asking these questions. You know, we can sit here and scream all we want as an industry, but we need our customers, we need the architects to be raising these questions for us. And don't think LEED is just a domestic problem. It's actually the biggest green building system internationally. There's now several thousand LEED buildings going on all over the world. And China is looking very seriously at adopting LEED as their green building standard, as is the United Arab Emirates. We need to be fighting those efforts as well. And the only way you can fight those is with actual science and data and not just emotional pleas. And again, if you're asking, is this going to have a potential, all of this focus on sustainability, on renewability, is this going to have an impact on our, you know, a potential for us that do the right thing in the forest? Are we going to be looking at a bigger piece of the puzzle moving forward, or a bigger piece of the pie? And I really think we are, and I'm going to end with just two slides here to illustrate why I think that I'm correct. We saw Chinese imports, not just from us, but Chinese imports, our exports to China over the last several years increasing like gangbusters. But actually, China's imports of hardwood lumber from all sources have actually gone down now for 2 straight years, while our piece of the pie keeps growing up. And part of that is coming because they're using less and less tropical wood in China. A lot of that is buildings, hotels in the U.S., for example, you know, U.S.-owned hotel systems, for example, in the U.S. in China that want to use, you know, whether it's American materials, but it's less and less use now, I think, of some questionable tropical wood around the world. And I think in Europe, this is really the case, where if we look now, you know, we all know Europe's been mired now for about 7 or 8 years in a pretty heavy recession. Can't really call it a depression, but a recession still. But if we look at what's happened to Europe's imports of hardwood lumber over the last 7 or 8 years, you see where we are now, the U.S., yes, we've lost a little bit of market share, but look at the fall in the consumption of tropical lumber. They've borne the brunt of it. Now, when Europe starts to pick back up, when they start building houses in Spain again, and Europe starts to pick back up, how much of this are we going to be able to put down here? I think an awful lot. So with that, I know we're going to have questions and answers later on. I think I stayed pretty close to right on time, so I'll leave you with that, and I look forward to continuing the discussion later on this afternoon. Thank you all very much for your attention. Very much for your attention. Very much for your attention. Very much for your attention.